This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The window is closing. The dire but not unexpected warning from the United Nations in a new report on climate change. It finds that we residents of Earth have already heated the planet by 2 degrees Fahrenheit, and that no matter what actions we take, a hotter, more turbulent climate future is here. Still, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports there's still a chance to change our emissions to stop tomorrow from being even hotter. How would we do that? What does a hotter reality mean for us here in Greater Boston, and how do we live with it? To help us answer those questions, we turn to Peter Frumhoff. He's the Director of Science and Policy and Chief Climate Scientist at the Union of Concerned Scientists, a Cambridge-based nonprofit. Peter, welcome to Radio Boston.
A pleasure to join you.
So I'm struck that you were a lead author on a previous IPCC report. So you're just the person to kind of paint the picture for us here, because the data is a little overwhelming. What does this report say?
Well, there's no way to sugarcoat it. I mean, it is a stark and sober appraisal of the state of the science, and the state of the science is clear. We are already living in a globally warmed world. We've already had, as you say, 2 degrees Fahrenheit warming, and that's bringing with it changes that we're already seeing in our lived experience, from more extreme heat, such as we're seeing in the Pacific Northwest, literally as we speak, to wildfires in the West and across the globe, to more intense flooding and droughts. And these are changes that are a consequence of our continued burning of fossil fuels and emissions associated with it, of carbon dioxide, a primary heat-trapping gas that is increasing warming across the planet.
And as I understand it, Peter, this report really says those emissions are a cause for the change in temperature. And also, maybe for the first time, we have some greater certainty about that contribution to weather patterns as well, correct?
That's right. The extreme weather events that we're seeing now are supercharged. They're supercharged by the warming that's resulted from our emissions of carbon dioxide and other heat-trapping gases. The report highlights how we're seeing more extreme events, from increased flooding and droughts to more extreme heat, literally in every region of the globe. This is not something that anybody is being spared from. And those changes are real. They're present tense. They're caused very clearly, as the report highlights, in its sober and kind of scientifically understated tones, by our actions, by the burning of fossil fuels. It also importantly paints a picture of future worlds. It provides, through climate models, some clarity, increased clarity, about the possible different futures that we may live in, depending on the choices that we make today. So it's both stark but clear in its recognition that the future climate needn't be much worse if we take serious action, or could be quite catastrophic if we continue on the path that we're currently on.
All right, let's dispatch with this next question right now. How credible are these findings, and what weight does the organization itself, IPCC, bring to those findings?
So the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change has been around for about 40 years. It's the global organization that brings the scientific community together literally every 6 to 7 years to do a state of the science assessment under the auspices of the United Nations. The report could not be more conservative and careful in its approach. They have a set of standards. They only rely on the peer-reviewed literature. This is the first of a series of reports that will come out over the next several months. This looks just at the physical science evidence. What is the physical science telling us about the changes we're seeing and the changes that are projected? It reviews the peer-reviewed literature. It itself is subject to multiple rounds of reviews. It's several hundred scientists from across the globe participating in a process. Every government who's a member of the United Nations, including the United States, literally has to sign off word by word, line by line, comma by semicolon, to the summary for policymakers, the core document that speaks the findings of the science in clear and unequivocal terms to the policymakers, who are the primary audience, together with the public at large.
So there's so much I want to unpack there, but let's begin by just bringing this home for people a little bit. So you talked about extreme weather events. We're hearing from this report that We have a global scale, global problem, and the weather extremities are going to get worse. Last year, hottest summer on record in Massachusetts. This year, we've seen one of the wettest Julys on record. The heat waves in June made it the hottest June on record. This report says, what, these are new realities? This is more of the shape of thing to come, regardless of which of these scenarios plays out, right?
Well, it's definitely clear that we are seeing disruptive climate change today here in New England and across the Northeast and literally across the globe. And so we've had a record over the past couple of decades of, for example, increased heavy precipitation in the Northeast and New England. We've seen rainfall and snow come in more intense packets, and that has lots of implications for flooding. That trajectory is already with us. It's already caused by the warming of the planet, is worsened by that. And so we are living and will continue to live in a warmed world. The question at hand is really how much worse will it get? And what can we do to both prepare for the changes that we know are coming, increased sea level rise, for example, something we might want to chat about, but also quite clearly by taking strong action to reduce emissions. Avoid truly catastrophic changes. So yes, we have some warming today. We're seeing it in real time. It's part of our lived experience. But if we take serious action to reduce emissions, the IPCC report is quite clear that we can transition to a clean energy economy and one that limits the amount of warming further by just a couple fractions of a degree. We'll see some further impacts associated with that. But they won't be ones that we can't handle, but they would be truly ones we can't handle as a society, both here in the Northeast and across the world, if we continue our current practice of treating the atmosphere as an open sewer and sending unfettered carbon dioxide emissions to it. That has to change.
Okay, obviously this is a global problem and we'll need global policy change, but we are here in the Northeast. This show is Radio Boston and you've been talking about the Northeast. So let's stay here for a minute. You said we could take steps to reduce emissions. We could take steps that don't bring us into the worst of the five types of scenarios that are laid out for what could come next. Let's just touch on what some of those policy changes here might be.
So there are many things we can do here to prepare for changes, and that includes making our communities and our coastlines more resilient, for example, to sea level rise. We'll see about another 6 to 12 inches of sea level rise globally and presumably across the Northeast as well by mid-century under the best of circumstances.
That's basically guaranteed, right?
I beg your pardon?
That's basically guaranteed under all the circumstances. Yeah, we'll see at least that much.
Pretty much baked into the climate already, the changes that we're seeing as the ocean continues to warm and expand and as land-based ice melts into it, is some further expansion of sea level rise. And the best estimate from the IPCC report is that we'll see about another 6 to 12 inches globally and on average, including across the Northeast. That's significant, right? A storm surge that comes from a nor'easter would have greater impact if it came a few decades hence than if it came today. These are things we need to prepare for to limit coastal flooding. We need to make sure our communities and those most vulnerable among us are prepared. But here in the Northeast and across the nation, we can take aggressive action to reduce emissions. There are obviously choices we can make as individuals to transition to cleaner burning cars or to use public transportation instead of automobiles and reduce pollutants that way. There are lots of individual choices. The most important thing we can do, though, is make sure that our national policymakers, both the Biden administration and Congress, are taking action to set national policies to bring our emissions, as the president has argued for, has proposed, down about 50% by 2030 over the next decade. That's a step towards the net zero emissions we need by mid-century. And that requires really national policies to build out charging infrastructure for electric cars, to raise the fuel economy standards of our vehicles so they're less polluting, to require that new homes and buildings have codes that don't rely on natural gas, but rather on electricity, which you can make much cleaner by cleaning up the electrical grid, by setting clean energy standards and transitioning really a sharp turn away from fossil fuels towards renewable energy from wind and solar, all of which provide lots of economic opportunities as well as climatic and societal benefits in terms of limiting climate risk. So these are things that require our action at a national level and that all of us in New England can call upon our national policymakers to support.
And I do want to note that we have a new law here in the Commonwealth that the state has to achieve its own net zero emissions by 2050. And for our listeners, net zero means total amount of greenhouse gases that we put into the atmosphere have to be balanced by what we can remove. So we do have that policy in place here. I wonder about other kinds of mitigation. I'm thinking, Peter, of the reporting on the city of Chelsea, which is one of the hottest cities in the state. You talked about protecting our most vulnerable. It has vulnerable populations. White roofs on the school buildings to reduce surface heat. Will we see more practical everyday steps like that that we're all going to need to take to mitigate the 1.5 degrees of warming that this report says is going to happen now, no matter what?
There are lots of things we can do at a local level. White roofs is one, planting trees in urban areas to increase, to reduce what's called the heat island effect and make our city streets, particularly in hard-hit urban areas, cooler. Those are actions that we can take at a local level. Local communities can set building codes and require increased electricity generation as opposed to oil and gas. They can provide subsidies for communities to transition from oil and gas heating in the winter to heat pump. Something I've done personally has been a tremendous benefit to both my electricity costs and to my climate impacts. So there's lots of things that local communities can do. As you rightly point out, the state can take action, but we all have to put our shoulder to the wheel and make sure that our national government, both the administration and Congress, are acting in alignment with the science that this report so clearly and starkly portrays.
In our last couple of minutes, I want to kind of get personal. When our team was talking about this morning and just looking at the data and the messaging of this report, it gets you in your stomach. You have worked in this area for a very long time. You've written one of these reports before. How did you feel as a citizen of Earth when you saw this?
You know, I can read the report as a scientist, and I understand and I'm familiar with the literature, and I can read its facts in a straightforward and rational way. But as you say, it's impossible to read this to really recognize what it's describing in those kind of sober scientific terms without tearing up, without recognizing that this is a real gut punch, right? It is. It describes a world that we may well go into if we don't take actions literally today, that will be unrecognizable to those of us living today, and one that we do not want to provide our children and grandchildren. It is a heartbreaking story of what we might have done had we taken action according to the science 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, had the fossil fuel industry not invested in denial and delay. But we only can act from where we are today. And so I am both heartbroken and determined to make sure that we move forward and make the sharp turn away from fossil fuels that we need and leave a hospitable planet for our kids.
All right, so give us one glimmer of hope. What's one of the hopeful things for you?
Well, I'm cognizant of the strong policy position of the current administration. I don't want to get too political, but the current presidential administration has taken a very strong stand, making a commitment to bring emissions down 50% this nation over the next decade and to return to the Paris Climate Agreement and be a meaningful leader. It's going to take more than the administration, though. It's going to take Congress. And I'm very heartened by the leadership by our members of Congress here in Massachusetts and by and large across New England, both in the Senate and the House. They are ones who get this. They are ones who are willing to work on a bipartisan basis. And I think all of us need to speak to our friends and families in other parts of the country and make sure that they're also speaking to their policymakers and telling them what they need to see done so that we can all make it through this truly challenging climate crisis.
All right, that's Peter Frumhoff. He's the Director of Science and Policy and Chief Climate Scientist at the nonprofit Union of Concerned Scientists in Cambridge. He also served as a lead author on a past IPCC report on climate change. Peter, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.